This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 67 of What's It Like. My guest is Victoria Ransom. Somewhere in the San Francisco area?
Yes.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm in Redwood City, which is about half an hour south of San Francisco.
Did you grow up in that area?
I did not. I grew up on a farm in New Zealand, a long, long way from here.
Oh, wow. So did you come from a large family?
No, I didn't. I'm one of two siblings, so I have a younger sister.
Mm.
We grew up in a small village called Scotts Ferry. There's about 20 houses in Scotts Ferry, so it really is kind of the middle of nowhere.
So who had the biggest influence on your life growing up?
Different people, but certainly my parents. Number one, my parents, I think they just encouraged me so much and gave me so much confidence. And particularly my dad, I think, was always in a non-pushy way, really encouraging my sister and I to really strive for the best and reach our potential. So I think that they had a huge influence on me. And then I think just my upbringing in my community had a big influence. Until age 12, my schooling was at the local school where there was literally 25 students in the entire school. And so it was like one big family. And I think there was just such a high level of support for all the students and no peer pressure. And I was able to really, really excel there. So I think that had a big impact on my life in terms of just, I don't know, building a sense of confidence.
Do you know how your parents met?
Yes. My mum grew up in a small farming town, and my dad was actually grew up in the city, but he decided he wanted to work on a farm. So he was a young shepherd, and my mum worked in the pharmacy, and they met one day, I guess, when he went to the pharmacy.
How fun. What was your major challenge growing up as a child?
Well, I don't know that there was any one particular thing that as a young child, to be honest, I think I had a really nice upbringing. We weren't at all a wealthy family, but I had very supportive, very loving parents. I couldn't complain one little bit about, and a great supportive school environment in a great community. So honestly, I think I had everything that a kid needs to thrive. Like I say, it wasn't a wealthy region or a wealthy family, but that was not important at all. So as a child, I think I worked really, really, really hard. I always have, but that was just something I did. It wasn't a challenge. So I have to face some challenges later in life. But honestly, as growing up, I don't think there was any particular thing where I'd point to and say that it was really rough for me as a child.
Mm-hmm. You did well in school?
I did, yep. I worked really hard, but I did do mm-hmm. really well. But I would attribute it to more hard work than anything else. I think that's one thing I've done throughout my whole life, is work hard for stuff.
Did you go on to college?
I did. So after primary school, which is what we call it in New Zealand, I went to high school. And actually, because we lived out in the country, I had to go to like a boarding school, but basically it was a day school with a part of the school where students who lived in the country could sleep there. And that was an all-girls school. I did that, and while I was there, I heard about a scholarship to study at an international school called the United World College. There's about 8 of them in the world. One of them is in the United States. They have about 200 students from 90 different countries all studying together and doing community service and doing a lot of outdoor activities. And the idea is to bring kids from all over the world at impressionable ages and create international understanding. So I applied for that scholarship and got it. And so my last year of high school and really like the first year of college was spent at this international school in New Mexico. From there, I ended up learning about how great the U.S. college system is, and I applied and ended up going to a liberal arts college in the Midwest called McAllister College.
Mm, yeah. So when you graduated from college, what did you do then?
So I studied psychology in college because I felt like I really wanted to help people, and that seemed like a very direct way to help people. When I was approaching graduation, though, I felt like for me to get the kind of job that I wanted in psychology, I'd have to go on and do further studies. I wasn't sure that I was ready to do that, and so I thought it was sort of a bit of a panic moment. What am I going to do? I need business experience. So my last year of college, I did an internship with a consulting firm and ended up, upon graduation, getting a job with them and going to London. So I spent 6 months in London working for this consulting firm, and then I had a couple of friends that were in New York doing investment banking, and at the time that felt like a good idea, given that I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but it seemed like be good on my resume and a good experience. So I applied to some investment banks in New York and ended up getting a job with Morgan Stanley, and spent a couple of years at Morgan Stanley as an analyst in their media group.
Mm. So did you always want to be a CEO?
No, never crossed my mind, really. No, I wasn't. So I wasn't one of these kids that, or one of these people that say, you know, they knew from age 11 that they wanted to be an entrepreneur and they had a lemonade stand and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure there are a lot of people like that, but no, I didn't really realize that that was a career option. I think a lot of people don't, and I didn't grow up in a region like, if you grow up in Silicon Valley, everybody thinks about being an entrepreneur. Where I grew up, that wasn't something that you really thought about. So actually, that Morgan Stanley, got to a point where I thought, well, this is not really what I want to do with my life, and had a real passion for travel, and had previously, while at Morgan Stanley, wanted to learn to surf and looked for trips where we could learn to surf, and found that there was a bunch of sort of surf camps for college kids, but nothing for, I guess, young professionals, which is what I was at that time. And so I thought there was an opportunity to create a company that did adventure sports vacations for people that really wanted to learn a sport, but also travel a country, get to explore that country, stay in nice accommodation, that sort of thing. So left Morgan Stanley and co-founded with my co-founder, Alan Shuad, Access Trips, which started as one trip in New Zealand. And to be honest, that's all we really thought of at that time was, let's create one trip in New Zealand and see how it goes, and sort of assumed we'd, you know, try it for a year or two and go back to graduate school. So we started a ski and snowboard trip in New Zealand and had tons of success. We got a good number of people signed up for that first trip. People loved it. They asked, would we start another trip? So we thought, okay, let's start a trip in Switzerland, which is where my co-founder is from. And then after that, we started, I think the next year, about 5 trips, and then we really started expanding until we built out a network of about 40 different trips in about 18 different countries. So again, it wasn't necessarily that we set out to build a global travel company. We started with one trip because it seemed like a good adventure, and before we knew it, we found we loved it, and we've fallen into entrepreneurship.
Did you act as the tour guide on the trips?
We did initially, yeah. For at least the first couple of years, we were doing everything. We were doing customer service, we were doing marketing, we were setting up the website, and we were organizing the trips, and we were leading the trips. It was probably after about the third year that we pulled back and hired others to run all the trips and just manage the business side of things.
You still have that company?
Actually, we've sold it now, I guess about 2 years ago now. We had, which is jumping ahead a little bit in the story, but we'd started another company, and which is the company we have today, and we're just so busy we really couldn't manage two companies at once, so we sold that business.
So what exactly do you do?
So what I do today is I'm a co-founder and CEO of a company called Wildfire, which Wildfire is a social media marketing software company. So basically we provide a software as a service that helps companies with all aspects of their social media marketing. So there's tools that help them to grow their fans and followers. There's tools that help them to keep those fans and followers engaged, to keep track of what they're saying, to respond to them, to measure a company's success with social media marketing. So it's really a complete tool suite or tool set for companies to take advantage of social media marketing.
So in a day-to-day fashion, what are you in charge of?
My title is CEO, but that has changed a lot over the course of the company. So we started Wildfire in 2008, and in fact, the genesis of Wildfire is that we were looking to market access trips on Facebook. We thought that a great way to grow our fan base would be to give away a free trip. When we looked into what we need to do in order to do that, we realized we'd need to build a Facebook application. We thought, well, hey, that's a real barrier to entry for us, and we're pretty tech savvy. What about all the other businesses? So came up with this idea of creating a platform that would help businesses to really easily, with no expertise required, run campaigns on Facebook, and it's expanded a lot from there. But when we first started the company, my co-founder, Alan, who was my co-founder for Access Trips as well, really focused on the managing the engineers and managing the product development side of things, and I focused on basically all the other functions, so the business development, marketing, sales, customer support. It was the two of us and a few developers. We're now 230 employees and obviously I have a senior management team, so my role has changed a lot. We have someone that's heading up the sales team. We have someone that's heading up engineering, marketing, et cetera. So a lot of my time is spent really managing the key team leaders or the key executive team and setting the direction for them, being a spokesperson for the company, managing our investors and our financing needs, and really just, overseeing the company direction and the culture and the vision. And those would be sort of my main functions. Day-to-day, though, it totally varies. And I guess the different responsibilities or different priorities I have at any given time certainly vary a lot as well.
What's the best thing about your job?
I love the variety. So I absolutely love that I get to, One minute I might be in a meeting discussing the product vision, and then I'm in a meeting talking about how we can measure and make our sales team more effective, and then I'm talking about, the design for the website. So I love that I get to be involved in all parts of the business and the overall strategy of the business. I just find that super stimulating and exciting. And then I really, really, and this is something that's grown over time. When we started, we were a tiny team. Now we're a big team. I love the team at Wildfire. It's a super motivated, passionate, dynamic, great bunch of people who I really am inspired by. And so that has become one of the sort of key motivators for me, is just building a great company for the team that's working so hard.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn the question around. What's the worst thing about your job?
I think the worst thing is just that you can't switch it off ever. So I think next week I'm going to go away on vacation for the first vacation in 2 years. And I know that it's not like I can leave and totally forget about the business. I'll be online a lot. So I'll be thinking about it a lot. And so it's just, you really, even when you're not working, you're kind of in the back of your mind, you're thinking about it. So there's quite a lot of pressure associated with being a CEO, and particularly when you've got, 230 people that you're ultimately responsible for employing and their families. So it's not that you feel like that all the time. I certainly have learned pretty well, I think, to deal with that pressure. But it does mean that you're in it or you're not, and you have to be really committed to just putting your all into it.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Yeah, I think different people can succeed as CEOs. And I know there's some CEOs that have been extraordinarily effective who have completely different styles from me. And then there are others that have been extraordinarily effective who I would say might have more similar styles. So ultimately, I think leaders have to be really, really authentic to who they are, because if you try to be someone who you're not, I think it just doesn't work and people see through it. But I think you've got to be... you've got to have a good strategic mind. I think you have to be visionary and be able to articulate that vision. I think you have to have great interpersonal skills and a good sense for people. In our industry, you have to understand technology, but having said that, I'm not the one building the technology, so I certainly am not a coder and haven't needed to be. You definitely have to be able to multitask and handle a lot of different things all at once. I think it's really important that you have a broad set of skills. I don't have to be an expert in marketing, but I have to be able to understand it. I don't have to be an expert in sales, but I have to be able to comment on it and understand and weigh in on things. And you have to have a balance of, ultimately, I think to be an entrepreneur, at least, you've got to be an optimist and, you've got to really believe in what you're doing. But at the same time, you have to also be realistic and be aware of problems around the corner. And so that's probably a fairly hard couple of qualities to find in people. Either you need to have that yourself or you need to, with your co-founder, for example, you need to balance that out.
If someone wanted to, how would they get a job like yours?
Well, in my particular case, Alan and I just started a company, and it was the same when we started Access Trips. We didn't have a ton of money, but we had enough money that we could support ourselves for a little while. We had an idea. We found a couple of engineers, and we got started. And the truth is, I had no idea that the company would get as big as it's got, and we're going to get much bigger. So if you want to start your own business, then you kind of just have to start it, and there's a darn good chance that it won't succeed. Lots of people don't succeed, but I think something that's really great in the U.S. in particular is that, particularly in Silicon Valley, that's okay. If you try and fail, that's totally okay. People consider that you should really be applauded. So I think, to get this job, in my case, we built the company up and that's how we got the job.
Now, you went back to school for your MBA, right?
Yes, yeah.
And was that a good choice?
Yeah, it was a good choice. I don't think it's a necessity to starting your own business. In my case, I had built up Access Trips to a nice size and was kind of ready for the next challenge. And I'd always wanted to go back to graduate school. It was great in terms of building up a good network. The network that I've got through business school has been super helpful. The credibility that I've got from having an MBA has been really, really great. And the education was great too, but to be perfectly honest, I feel like most of what you do as an entrepreneur, you learn on the job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need to have classroom experience in order to be an entrepreneur. But can it help? Sure, it can help.
And the Harvard MBA gives you a bit of cachet, right?
It certainly helps. Yeah, I mean, it does. Whether it's right or wrong, it does sort of, it's just a check mark next to your name where people assume that you've got a certain level of ability, I guess.
Mm-hmm. If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
Well, I guess it divides between when I'm in the office and when I'm not in the office. So I do a fair bit of traveling for conferences, and we now have offices in several different parts of the world. And so I'm spending time in different offices. So it's a bit different when I'm traveling. When I'm here, it would be a mixture of, I have a lot of internal meetings and catching up on email and phone calls, lots of internal meetings with the various different departments at Wildfire, and then there's always external stuff, whether it's meeting with partners or meeting with important clients or talking to journalists or investors. But I would say most of my day is spent in meetings, actually.
Victoria, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. So how do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I've never had too much trouble motivating myself. I think that's one of the things. I'm fortunate that I've always been a pretty driven person. But nowadays it's almost through necessity. helping to run a pretty sizable company that's moving at 1,000,000 miles an hour. So it's, you know, whether I like it or not, I've got to move along at that pace as well. So it has really been too much of an issue in this position, I think, in this job.
Well, let me turn the question around then. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
So I've got better, I'd say, at saying that, you know, weekends, I definitely work on the weekends, but often by getting better about taking time and reading or exercising, although I should do more of it, frankly, or going to the movies or whatever, just things to kind of decompress. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, I'd say, I really recognize that I'm in a great, great, great position right now, and to keep that, I need to work really, really hard. So I would say I don't have work-life balance, but nor am I expecting it right now, and it's a conscious choice, and I'm okay with it.
So your life is crazy, but you're choosing to be crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Well, there's different things along the way. We've certainly had our challenges in every business that I've run. I've had personal challenges. So I had a very serious life-threatening illness, which once diagnosed was something that I'm able to treat. But until I was diagnosed, it was very serious and definitely, you know, was one of those near-death kind of experiences. So I think that helped put things in perspective. And then, yeah, along the way, when you run a company, there are so many challenges. Some of them are small, some of them are really big, and there's certainly been a few along the way with wildfire.
Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through these challenges?
Well, I tried. It's easier said than done, but I just try to keep things in perspective, I guess. So obviously, if you're suffering a life-threatening illness, it's hard to keep that in perspective. That really is pretty serious. But I came through that, and so then that was a good time to reflect on how precious life can be, and you need to make the most of it. I guess in the business, when you're facing challenges, sometimes it's really good to take a step back. It does feel like super stressful and super worrying, but just take a step back and say, is this really the end of the world if this or that happened? And it's not. And so trying to keep things in perspective and ultimately realize how lucky I am is important. But it doesn't mean that I'm always perfectly able to do that. I think it's sometimes easier said than done.
If you're giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would you say? What would be your best advice?
So I think, don't be afraid to take risks. I hear from a lot of people who really would like to start their own business, but at the end of the day, they completely overthink it, and they're really just afraid to take the plunge. So if that's what you want to do, you will just have to take a risk. But don't take a risk that you can't recover from. So don't get yourself into crazy personal debt such that you're completely bound to that if the business doesn't succeed, because it certainly might not. The other thing is, you just have to work hard for what you want. Nothing, I don't believe, to most people, things are not just handed to you. To some people, it is, but most of us aren't. Life doesn't work out that way. And so I just think you've got to work really, really hard for what you want and have a clear goal and go after it and put a lot of effort into it. The other thing is, I'd say follow your passion and really try to find a life that you're excited by and that you love, but also be realistic. You're not going to love your job every day. You really won't. And so don't expect that life is meant to be fun and games all the time, because unfortunately it's not. And there's a lot of hard work that's required to get what you want.
I want to thank Victoria Ransom for joining me today. Thanks, Victoria. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. My pleasure.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.